Hello, everybody. We're back for another fantastic episode of There Is No Offseason, Baseball Prospectus' only daily dynasty podcast, and one that guarantees that we will be out of here in 60 minutes, or I would say your money back, but we're not gonna go that hard with that. I'm Mark Berry. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and with me, as always, is Jesse Roche, the dynasty master. Jesse, what's up, buddy?
I like that one. It's good. It's good. Have a slight head cold with being a father of a 3-year-old. So
oh yeah, love it.
Just kind of happens here and there, but I'm doing well. No temperature or anything. No other symptoms other than a runny nose. So I should be good to go. I'm ready to talk baseball. Lots to cover. You know, of course, every podcast, lots to cover. We will do our darndest to get this within an hour. Scout's honor, right?
Yeah. Scott's honor that we'll try.
Yes.
Not Scott's honor that it's going to happen.
No.
So I guess let's start. We can bookend this. Some of the things that we wanted to talk about, some promotions, a couple teases for the top 500 that will be coming out next week. We're recording this on Friday, the 27th. So we'll give you a few morsels about maybe what to expect when the new top 500 comes out after all the graduations. But we're going to bookend this with some, I guess, maybe not the most fun news, which is we're going to start with injuries and we're going to finish with some bad starts and how to handle all of those moving forward. The most notable one that I think that has happened since the last time we talked is Freddie Peralta going out. Craig Counsell is saying that he's going to miss significant time. Hasn't really put a number on it, but whenever you hear significant, it translates to scary. It's kind of a bummer because Brewers rotation has been super fun this year, and Peralta is just so different from a lot of the arms that we've been seeing having success. What do you think in the short term happens with Peralta in Dynasty? He'll take a dip a little bit just because injuries are injuries, but how do you think that this will affect his Dynasty stock in the short term?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to still be a top 100 player, but obviously I think it depends on team by team. You know, obviously if you're a win-now team and you have Freddie Peralta and he's expecting a lengthy absence with a right posterior shoulder strain, and I mean, who knows how long that will be. If you're trying to win now, it's time to deal Freddie Peralta, try to move him to a team that's rebuilding, you know, because for one, you're just going to be without him for a while. Mm-hmm. And two, you know, what happens if he's out for the year, if he has surgery? And we don't know if that's necessarily even on the table yet. You know, obviously it's rest to rehabilitation right now, but it's never good when a shoulder injury crops up, especially one that requires such a lengthy, you know, absence as has been, you know, stated by Craig Counsell. So yeah, you definitely should be trying to move Freddie Peralta. For now, he's moving down in the rankings. He's not going to move down as if he's out for the season or has sustained an injury that is likely to sideline him for, you know, parts of next year, for example. This is going to be a more modest move down the rankings. He's certainly dropping at least one tier, potentially two tiers, but given, you know, how highly rated he was, that's still going to keep him within the top 100. So, you can try and move him, but it's, you know, obviously not an ideal time. And I think if you're a rebuilding team, it's not a bad idea to kind of like see what the cost is for Freddie Peralta. Maybe you could get him for like a smattering of win-now pieces from a win-now owner. So, you know, it's definitely, these types of injuries are tricky because there's so much uncertainty, and that's just really difficult when you're a dynasty owner trying to, you know, handle it.
Yeah, and I think that, let's see here, he was number 43 on the May update in your dynasty rankings. The next handful of starters is Sandy Alcantara, Carlos Rodon, Max Scherzer, Jacob deGrom. So he's up in that top of the top. I wonder if you could pick up like a Kevin Gausman for him, or like a few rungs down in that starting pitcher. I guess Shane Bieber, but that comes with all of its own questions. But yeah, if you're winning now, it's really hard in a dynasty because he's so young and has been so dominant in the past, but injuries are scary and you don't really want to rely on somebody that's injured already to come back and help you immediately. So it's a bummer. I think in the short term, Aaron Ashby is probably solidifying his spot in the rotation. He's kind of been flirting with it a little bit, and I think that he'll probably get a little bit longer of a leash. I wonder if we see Ethan Small at all. He's been really good in AAA. He's just really, the command is, I guess, spotty, if you want to be charitable. I don't know. I don't think that will translate very well to the big leagues, so that might be something that we'll have to get ironed out in the meantime. But I wonder if we'll see Ethan Small at all in the next couple months.
I think possibly. I actually would say that Ethan Small's command might be one of the rare players whose command might be better than his control. partly because he still just doesn't have a breaking ball that's viable. It really is just fastball changeup deception arm. Kind of like very similar in a lot of ways to, you know, Luciano. Mm-hmm. Back in his heyday. I think that's kind of what you could expect from Ethan Small. I legit think he has that kind of upside, which I guess might not get many people excited, but we'll get some. I think he's probably going to be the next one up if there is another injury. I just don't, the Brewers don't really have many other options now, given the injuries in the rotation. And, you know, obviously Ashby's slotting in, and I really think this is the time to, if you're a dynasty owner, this is your chance to see what you get, what you have with Aaron Ashby, because he legit could take it and run with it, you know, and solidify his spot in the rotation. Obviously, he's had a pretty good year this year. His control and command are still just well below average. You know, his walk rate right now is 13.5%. You know, I guess if you look at his pitch charts, pitches are going to be just like all over the place. But this is not the same. It's not like Matt Brash command. There's enough command here, and his stuff is so good that I think he can still get by. But I do think there's going to be some blow-up starts where it's just not there, not working for him. Of course, there's going to be starts where he's electric and lights out. So he's going to be a fun one. You know, I think he's a guy that needs to be owned in all formats. 10-team formats. Go get Aaron Ashby. I mean, this is the time for him to really thrive. I think he's going to be a strikeout machine. It's going to be fun to see how he does with an extended look in the rotation.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned with Peralta, maybe one of the times to see what you can get for him would be now because of the possibility of surgery. Somebody that is having shoulder surgery is Alex Reyes. He'd been out so far for all season this year after kind of being inserted as the closer last season. It looks like he's going to have surgery for the labrum issue that he has. He was probably close previously, but he's pretty much droppable in all dynasty leagues at this point, wouldn't you say?
You know, if you're in a 30-team league with IL spots, you can hold him. But obviously, in any other format, 24 teams or lower, unless it's like incredibly deep, I mean, he's definitely droppable.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah, it's rough. He's such a talented arm.
There's so much promise.
Crazy. Yeah, his stuff's crazy. It's been a very rocky road for him throughout his career, partly his doing, to be honest. But obviously injuries are not necessarily the pitcher's doing, and it's unfortunate. Hopefully he can come back and show the same stuff and maybe have improved command when he comes back, and all of a sudden he's a thing again. But for now, just like you could put him out of your mind until we hear from him again.
Luis Gil is also having Tommy John surgery, so I think that you're probably free. You should probably be free to move on from him as well. In my opinion, he was surprisingly pretty good last year, and then we haven't necessarily gotten to the same levels as in a big league performance, and it looks like he's going to be going down to injury now. I don't know how you hang on to him, because I don't necessarily know he's an exceptional fantasy starter anyways, so I don't know why you'd want to wait for him.
Yeah, I don't believe he's going to be placed on the IL, so I don't think he'd be eligible for an IL spot in any league, and you'd be taking up a minor spot or something. He's droppable. I think he's a reliever, likely long term. He was already dropping hard in the Dynasty prospect rankings. He will not be ranked in the top 500 next update, I guess, as a spoiler. He just won't be in there, because I just don't see the point in rostering a player like him who's likely almost certainly going to be a reliever or long term, given his command issues and the lack of a viable third pitch. So, I mean, he's got a huge fastball and a great slider. I think he could thrive in the bullpen, but I mean, you're not waiting around for 2 years for a potential middle reliever.
Yeah. Unless your league is 74 teams and you get extra points for having your name be Luis, I think that it's probably safe to move on from Heel. Adley Rutschman is here. He's in the big leagues. It happened. It didn't happen quite like we were talking about it last week. I know that we posited before we recorded this before he got called up, and I dreamed the dream that he and Grayson Rodriguez would be up at the same time. Didn't happen, but Adley Rutschman, it is the Rutschman era in Baltimore now, and he has been up for 5 games and has been, you know, fine. I wouldn't expect... I mean, I don't know really what else there is. He's going to be good. He's going to be one of the 3 or 4 best fantasy catchers on a year-to-year basis. But he's up now, so that's fun.
Yeah, it's super exciting. I think he's... I've told this to Orioles fans. I know a lot of Orioles fans. I am an Orioles fan and a Nationals fan. And I will just say... temper your expectations about Adley Rutschman offensively, because I don't know how much power he's going to get to in games early in his career. There's legit pop there, but you know, he's very much like I believe he's sort of a hit over power bat right now, and I do think he'll hit. I think he's going to give you good average, but you know, how much power, how many home runs he's going to get early in his career is uncertain. But in real life, he's got fantastic value. I mean, there's a reason why the prospect team ranked him so highly, and why you see him ranked so highly across the industry in real life lists, because he's an exceptional defensive catcher, and he's going to stay in the lineup at all times because the dude can hit. It's just, he's not going to be like a plus hit, plus power bat. I don't think that's who he is. I think that, you know, he is upside. I think he has the upside to hit like 280, 290 with, you know, 20 plus home runs for sure. I think that maybe more, maybe even more than that on both accounts. But I mean, if you can get that from your starting catcher, I mean, that's not too far off from what like prime Buster Posey was doing. So
yeah,
I think you've got to be thrilled. But you know, Orioles fans have a long memory with the Matt Wieters era. So be super excited. Adley Rutschman's there. The dude's a stud. And, you know, he's just going to be a fun one for a long time.
Yeah, I think that I had, in the preseason, writing about Rutschman, like, posited that same thing. It was like, yeah, his production, if you think about what he probably can do, he's going to look a lot like maybe Buster Posey in his prime. And prime Buster Posey was, like, perennially the number 1, 2, 3 fantasy catcher. So he's going to be a good one. He's going to be on top of that list for a long time. It outside of those like unicorn 50 home run seasons from Sal Perez, which I don't think we'll see a ton of, behind the plate. So, yeah, it's going to be fun to see the Orioles start to slowly fold in some of their minor league talent, because I really like a lot of the guys that they have in their system. All right. So we have a few more promotions that are definitely not as notable. Christopher Morrell has been playing with the Cubs all over the diamond. He's been a different position seemingly every day, playing a little center, playing a little shortstop, third base, second base, you name it, he's probably lined up there so far. Cal Mitchell got called up in Pittsburgh, and Oscar Gonzalez has been up for one game in Cleveland. I don't know if these three, or I shouldn't say I don't know, these three are not as impactful as Adley Rutschman or anyone of the Adley Rutschman ilk, but I think that they could easily be serviceable contributors, maybe not ones that you're going to be super excited to give up the farm for, but I think that they'll be those guys that are in the middle infield spots or the OF five spots that you still need production from, but won't be standouts. Do you have any thoughts about any of those three guys?
Yeah. You know, they're all interesting. Well, to different degrees, obviously. Yeah, I think of these three, Cal Mitchell is the player that I'm most excited to see in the major leagues. It's been a long time coming. I know that, you know, Brett has long been a fan of Cal Mitchell, that the prospect team in general has bought his bat from, like, the get-go. It's just about how much power he gets to in games, because the guy can hit. And, you know, he showed well in AAA. I will note, you know, it is AAA.
Right.
So how much, you know, he hit 5 home runs in 34 games. I mean, that's, he's not going to be a huge power bat. He did steal 6 bases. He's not going to be a big speed guy either. He's not he doesn't have much speed at all. But he can hit. I think that, you know, if you like what you've seen with Brian Reynolds, and you remove all of Brian Reynolds' athleticism, you might get someone like a Cal Mitchell, which I think is a pretty darn good player. So
you know, it's a good player, but it's some, like, you look at it and you're like, oh, so an unathletic Brian Reynolds, where do I sign up? Even though that's still good, I think part of that is just because people don't really realize how good Brian Reynolds has been. But I just love the unathletic Brian Reynolds comp.
Yeah, I mean, he's a lefty corner outfielder without the type of power you would like to see from a corner outfielder. So I don't know how much of a leash Mitchell's going to have throughout his career since he's such a poor defender. But, I mean, if he hits, I think he'll play. He's very much an intriguing player. Meanwhile, Christopher Morel, he's off to a fantastic start at the major league level. 37 awesome. Plate appearances, 2 homers, 2 stolen bases, hitting .313. You know, he's not going to hit .313. He has plenty of swing and miss in his game. You know, last year, of course, was a really rough season for him in Double A. 29.7% strikeout rate. Returned to the level this year and performed very well. The thing that's very real with Morel is his power and speed. I mean, he has plus raw and plus foot speed for sure. And you can see that already in his debut. You know, he's crushing, right? He's showing off his huge raw power. He's stolen 2 bases, 94th percentile sprint speed so far. That's legit. How much he can hit is a huge question. You know, in the minor leagues this year, swing strike rate was about 15%. And that's, you know, from a player who swings pretty often. So, you know, that means that it's his whiff rate is higher. I think that the major league level, he'd be lucky to have whiff rate around 35%, contact rate around 65%. But that said, you know, the power and speed are real, like I said, and if he can get to that, he's going to be an intriguing player. And if he can run into playing time like he is right now, I think he should be owned in most formats. I don't think I'd probably go touch him yet in like a 12 or 10 teamer, because I don't think he's going to necessarily have consistent playing time. And I think there's just a lot of incredible bust risk with Morel. I think he conceivably could just not hit at all of a sudden. But he's going to have interesting eligibility. He's likely going to play all over the field. And again, that power and speed. I mean, this is the type of player you take a stab on, because if somehow he's put it together offensively with the bat and he can get to that power and speed, he can be a player who rises very quickly. And he will be he wasn't on the top 500. He was like one of the last few out. It's really frustrating when I update the top 500 and the players that I leave out at the very end are all of a sudden just go bananas. Like Morel, one of them was Lenin Sosa was one of them who was like literally like the last guy I didn't rank, and he's gone crazy since then. And just it's frustrating.
It's pretty disrespectful, and it feels like an attack on you personally.
Exactly right.
So like cool it, Morel. One of the things that I find interesting about guys like this is he's hitting 313. Yes. We don't think that that's going to continue, but it doesn't really need to if we're talking good power, good speed. Even if he hits like 240, 250, if he can hit homers and steal bases, then you're still going to need to find a spot for him in the lineup. Another interesting thing for Morel is the last three games on the day that we're recording this, he's hit leadoff for the Cubs. So they're starting to have a little bit more faith in him and showing him more advantageous spots in the lineup, which is also something to monitor. More plate appearances, more opportunities for those counting stats. So I've been kind of scooping him up anywhere that I can in dynasty leagues. And just like you said, let's see if it's real, then I got something. If it's not, then oh well, no harm, no foul. Just toss him back and live to fight another day.
Yeah, the risk reward is very much worth trying to get Morel right now, I think. Meanwhile, the last guy that you mentioned was Oscar Gonzalez. And, you know, if you were concerned about Morel's potential swing and miss and his ability to hit, I'm actually, take that to another level for Oscar Gonzalez.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, last year he had 31 home runs between double and triple A. But he is incredibly aggressive. He's one of the more aggressive hitters in the minor leagues. He's going to swing at everything, and he swings and misses a lot. I know he only had a 14.3% strikeout rate in AAA, but that's because he literally swings at everything. I just don't – and, you know, it's not like he's has massive power either. So, you know, even though he hits all those home runs or has hit all those home runs, he's not like a plus power bat. His power is probably much closer to average. And I mean, there is pop in that bat. Don't get me wrong. But you know, and I say that, and you know, of course, you know, in his first game, he had a max exit velocity of 113 miles an hour. So there is power in that bat, but I just don't think he's going to hit. I think his approach is a disaster. He's very much limited to a corner. And, I think this is going to be a short-term call-up while Framil Reyes is out. And I just don't think that Gonzalez is a player that is a long-term fixture by any means. But all that said, if you're in a deep league, there is no reason not to take a flyer on someone like Oscar Gonzalez because, again, you know, he has produced at the upper levels the last couple of years. He's hit for power. He's already flashed some power in games in the major league level. Even if if he somehow is able to kind of have a heater at the major league level, all of a sudden you have something that you could either flip or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he is somebody who can weather his disastrous approach and actually find success at the major league level.
Jesse, I don't know if you know this, but he has a 0.0 strikeout rate so far. So I don't know where you're getting all this swing and miss.
That is true.
I kind of feel like if we could combine Oscar Gonzalez and Stephen Kwan into one player, he would probably be pretty good.
But, probably. Yeah.
I don't know that we have the technology for that quite yet, sadly. Let's talk about the top 500 prospects that will be coming out next week. You had mentioned that you wanted to hit on this, and you did throw us a little teaser crumb in this week's Dynasty Standouts for the month of May article that is up now at Baseball Prospectus. That we probably are going to have a new number one, and that's partially because a lot of the top 10 are graduating and will no longer be eligible for this list, but it's also because the guy that's going to be sliding into that spot has been awesome so far this year. Did you want to talk a little bit about some of the surprises or some of the movement that we might be seeing?
Yeah, I'll touch on the very top, you know, because we are going to see lots of graduations this coming month. You know, we've seen out of the top 10, we have the top three all likely to graduate. Julio Rodriguez, Bobby Wood Jr. have already graduated. They will not be on the upcoming list. Spencer Torkelson is almost certainly going to graduate by the time the list comes out next week. He was ranked third. Then Sei Suzuki's also graduated. He was sixth in the ranking. So four of the top six from the last update have all graduated. And of course, if you go further down the list, players like Jeremy Peña and Reed Detmers have also graduated. So there's going to be a lot of changes throughout the list. That said, you know, you're going to see players moving up. It does not necessarily mean that their value's changing or that they've actually legitimately made moves up. It's because of all those graduations. Of course, several players, of course, have made huge moves, and one player who's moving up to number one overall, Corbin Carroll, you know, it's hard to find any real fault in what he's done this year at Double A. It's been a crazy, crazy season. You know, since the last update, he's gone even crazier. Almost right after I did the update, I think he had four home runs in two games. May 7th
It's a
and
good
May
pace.
8th, he had two home runs in both games. So, you know, this year, I'll just briefly touch on what he's done in Double A. At 21 years old, he's hit 319, 449, 681 with 12 home runs and 14 stolen bases and a 15.9% walk rate. I mean, that'll do.
Yeah, that will
So
play.
one thing I'll say with Corbin Carroll is, of course, look, the speed is very real. It's very much plus plus. It plays on the bases. I think he very well is a 30 plus home run threat potentially at peak at the major league level. He can hit. He can also hit. He has a fantastic approach. It's a very much a patient approach. There's a reason why he has 25% strikeout rate, and he's had it basically his entire career in the minor leagues. It's because he's very patient. He sees lots and lots of pitches. It doesn't mean he doesn't have good bat to ball ability. He does. That approach, the bat to ball ability that he has, his crazy speed, and you know the quality contact he does make when he does connect, I think that all together is a recipe for a potential 300 hitter with a huge OBP. I mean, in OBP formats, he's very much number one, and it's not really even close. And the big open question that I think that this performance in Double A isn't really going to answer, and honestly, once he gets to Reno and Triple A, that's not going to do much for it either, except that we will have the data for him, because the PCL has access to public Statcast data. I mean, I don't really buy the full 12 home run power output that he's had in Double A. Eight of those home runs have come at home in Amarillo, where that team is slugging 550 at collectively. So, you know, I think some of it's a mirage, some of it's a hitting environmental, it's environmental power in a way. And if you go and look at the tape, a lot of those homers, they're not blasts. They're they're like 360 foot home runs that kind of get out of the park. Some of them are like 330, 340. So it's not like these are bombs. Granted, you know, I do think there is legit pop here, and I think his approach, his feel to hit, I think you're going to see him hit for more power than he actually has. He's one of those players I think will have more game power than raw. And while his raw power may only be like borderline or average, I think he's going to get to at least average game power, which means I think he could be a 20 home run hitter, 20 plus maybe at the major league level. And if you put it all together, 300 potential 300 hitter with 20 home runs and 30 stolen bases, that sounds awfully similar to like Trey Turner. And I think that's what Corbin Carroll could be, but obviously in the outfield. And I mean, that's very good. He's going to be moving. Not only is he going to be first overall in the updated Dynasty Prospect rankings, but he's going to move into the top 60 in the overall Dynasty rankings as well. So, yeah, it's a great time to be a Corbin Carroll owner. You know, honestly, I don't think he's going to arrive this year for anyone who has that hope that he could make an impact in 2022. They just brought up Alec Thomas, who's thriving at the major league level. I think that I do anticipate Carroll's got to move up to AAA soon, and I think he'll probably spend the year there. I think he'll be one of those guys like Bobby Witt Jr. was coming into this year, like Julio Rodriguez was coming into this year, where everyone's talking about him in the spring and saying, is he going to break camp? Is he going to break camp? And then he gets sent down to AAA for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what about the draft picks?
Right, exactly. I'm very much in on Corbin Carroll at this point. I really do buy a lot of what he's doing in AA. So, yeah, I think he's very clearly number one. Outside of that, we're going to see players move up naturally because of those graduations. You know, Riley Green, who was four, is going to move up to two. CJ Abrams likely is going to move up to three, even though he's not like performing very well in AAA right now. Ali Rushman, who was nine, is probably going to move up to four, which isn't, you know, it seems like a huge move, right? It's five spots, but he's not, for example, he was 88th in the dynasty rankings. He's not breaking the top 80 likely, for example. So that just kind of gives you a taste of what's to come, with that top group. And I guess I'll throw out who's likely going to be five right now. It's likely, my early inclination is likely it's going to be O'Neal Cruz. You know, just because the upside is so crazy. He has rebounded. Mm-hmm. He has rebounded in AAA after a really slow start. He's had a strong month. But I'm less confident in that. And I really need to dig into these players. But that's its new top four. So things are going to change throughout.
Okay, so we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. Hopefully we'll be able to Frankenstein this back together, but we were pretty much wrapping up on that top 500 teaser. We're not wanting to give too much away. You're going to have to come to the site. You're going to have to look at the rankings. You're going to have to devour every little morsel of content that we give you. But those are the fun ones. The rankings are always great. Check it out. There's going to be a lot of movement. And while there might be a lot of movement on the prospect list, there might not be a lot of movement on the top 500 dynasty players overall, just because a lot of the graduations will fluctuate those prospect lists. So we're going to try and do something a little bit different now. And that's, we're looking at Jesse's May Standout article and going to talk about some of the guys that were not very good in this month and basically in this season. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at these players, and we're going to do a little draft of the people that we would be willing to plant our flag in as, all right, these guys are going to bounce back, or I'm not super worried long term about them, or for this year for that matter. So we're just gonna pick some of the names, and we're gonna make three or four picks each and be able to talk about why we're not worried or some of the things that worry us more than others. Does that sound convoluted enough, Jesse?
Let's just pick players.
Yeah. Right? Yep. So we're doing some picks. You wrote this article, so I think it's only fair that you have the first pick from this list. Who do you want to talk about first? Who are you targeting from the guys that just have had dreadful Mays?
Well, this is going to be obvious. Wander Franco, he was in the others of note section after a really poor month so far this month. And I guess if you want to dive under the surface for Statcast data for this month, he had an average exit velocity of 86.9 miles an hour. He had one barreled ball, so 1.4% barrel rate this month, and a 29.7% hard hit rate. He's still making tons of contact, you know, like always. You know, Wander Franco is a contact machine. This past month, he made more contact than ever, really, 90.3% contact in May. Unfortunately, a lot of that contact was poor. And I mean, look, he's a young player. We're going to see ebbs and flows with him. You know, I think that he needs to work on his approach. He's a tad aggressive, and it causes him to swing at pitches that are, you know, he chases way too often. You know, his swing percentage, according to Fangraphs this past month, was 55.2%. He's got a, you know, he's such a good hitter. he needs to have more patience at the plate and pick his pitches. He needs to embrace, basically improve his play discipline. It needs to improve. And, you know, obviously he can make, his contact to bat to ball ability is elite. If he can improve, take another step forward, you know, again, I want to reiterate, Wander Franco is 21 years old at the major league level. If he can improve that play discipline, be more patient, not chase as often, you know, hit pitches that are hit, that are his pitches, that pitches that he can handle and drive, I think everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, for this is a little bit concerning. You know, we talked about him recently, prior to this disastrous run, and had, you know, I had moved him up to 5 in the dynasty rankings. Then, of course, this happened. And this is something that, you know, you kind of have to deal with young players. They don't all hit the ground running. They are going to have struggles. It took a while for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to really take off at the major league level. And again, this year, he's not necessarily busting down doors. So you have to have faith in the skills here. And Wander Franco is incredibly skilled. And he showed power, and he even showed some speed, and his bat to ball ability, and his potential ability to hit for batting average is basically no one can really challenge it. So yeah, not concerned. Definitely probably a great time to actually reach out to Wander Franco owners and say, hey, he's been so bad, why don't you trade him to me? I'll take him off your hands, you know.
Yeah. Why would you want somebody that bad on your team? Right? I'll do you the favor of putting him on my team.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that this is just the curse of being awesome at every level. When you are good to the point where you don't need great plate discipline and can still consistently hit over 300 at every minor league level that you've been to, I think that it may be, I don't want to go so far as to say it has you developing bad habits, because I think that he's still like really good, even if he hasn't been exceptional this season. But the aggression or the ability to make contact with these pitches, you don't want to make contact on everything. Like if it's something pretty far outside the zone and you're making contact, odds are it's not going to be the best contact. So, yeah, I just think that this is a product of Franco has been incredible everywhere. And so when you can be incredible without having to be patient, then why would you be patient? Like, you know, because being patient sucks. Number two, I'm going to take, we talked about him last week. I'm going to take Tyler O'Neill. And I think that I sort of talked myself into being this much of a fan of his last week. And it's mostly just because everything looks relatively the same. He's chasing a little bit less often, per Statcast, or he's chasing at a above average lead clip per Statcast, I should say. He's still 99th percentile in sprint speed. And I just think that he's been getting kind of unlucky with what he's been, with his stat line. And I don't know if that's something that is injury related or not, but I'm not overly worried about, Tyler O'Neill in Roto. And I think that he's going to be as consistent of a power and speed option as you can get out there, even if he's not going to hit 286 for the entire season like he did last year.
Yeah, agreed. I think he covered it, and we covered it last week too. So, yeah, I'm a little miffed that you just took O'Neill. I wasn't sure you would, but well, I'll take the other player that I thought you might be taking here, and I'll take Teoscar Hernandez. Okay. He was a disaster this month, and I just want to state, you know, he came off the IL with a strained oblique, and he came off the IL early this month in early May, and since he came off the IL, it's not gone so well. It's not gone so well. I have him in TGFBI, and that team's not doing well. I have him and O'Neal actually. So not great for
Well.
me there. But yeah, this month, Teoscar Hernandez is hitting. He's gone 6 for 60. Six for
Okay,
60,
yeah.
so he's hitting 100 with a 29% strikeout rate. It's not been good. That strikeout rate comes with a and not you know he's mainly chasing a ton. He's pressing a lot. He's swinging way more than he normally swings. His swing rate in this brief 3 week period has been almost 60%. I'm not too overly concerned about this. I think this is a very much a small sample blip for Teoscar Hernandez coming off of an injury. Give him time to kind of settle back in. He's still making tons of hard contact. He's just not swinging at the best pitches. So be patient with him. Honestly, maybe not a bad idea to see if he's available in trade, because again, he's old, he's getting older. He's almost gonna, he'll be 30 in October. So if he's on a team that is looking to get younger, or any teams are just trying to like unload him, I think it's not a bad idea to try and acquire him right now, because I do think he will rebound. I mean, it's not, I don't think any of the, other than his aggression, everything else is basically fairly consistent with what he's been throughout these last few years. So yeah, go get Teoscar Hernandez, and hopefully he rebounds for the sake of my TGFBI team.
Well, we're all rooting for your TGFBI team
Yes,
here.
please do.
So I'm going to take Alex Verdugo, and it's mostly because I don't think that we came into the season with any under the impression that he was going to break out and be a super duper star. That's not really who he's been at any level. I think that him hitting close to 300 with maybe 15, 20 home runs, handful of stolen bases, I think that's a pretty good fantasy player, even if it's not a superstar. And the reason that I'm taking him is because I'm not really all that worried about how he's been doing, because it's been pretty good. If you pull up his Baseball Savant page, and there is a lot of red. Doesn't whiff a lot, doesn't strike out. His hard hit percentage is pretty good. Lot and his expected statistics are a lot better than his actual statistics. It's actually a little crazy. He's hitting so far this season 232, 272, 348, and his expected batting average is 294. And where's that? And the expected slug is I lost it. But he's pretty much just been the same guy that he's always been, and the bottom line numbers are just dreadful. So I think that we'll be on a fast pace of production for Verdugo from here on out. Whether he gets back to that 300 level, I don't know, because the first couple months have been so bad. And unfortunately, they still count to your bottom line. But from here on out, I would expect Alex Verdugo-ish contributions for the rest of the season. And he's not a superstar, he's not a fantasy standout, but that's pretty good. And I think that some of the other names on this list scare me a lot more, I guess maybe is another one of the reasons that I'm picking Verdugo here.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he rebounds. It's been a very bizarre season for Verdugo, and in a lot of ways the Red Sox in general. But I'm going to take a player who I'm surprised you didn't take, and we have talked about on this podcast, Shane Bieber. It's been an interesting season for Shane Bieber. He actually is, on the surface, performing fine. 3.55 ERA, 1.25 WHIP, over 45 and two-thirds innings, 46 strikeouts. we've talked about his velocity over being the pass, and it's remains down. His last start, it actually was even slower. It was down to, it averaged 90, his fastball averaged 90.4 miles an hour. And it's not like it's just a slow fastball. It's a slow fastball with bad movement profile. It's going to be imminently hittable. When Shane Bieber was coming up, we were all very concerned about his fastball in general. And like, it wasn't great early in his career. And then his shape took off. Like, all of a sudden he got a lot more carry on his fastball starting in 2019. And it was a fantastic pitch until this year. Because now it's back to being a below average offer. That said, I still think he's a solid arm. I still think that he's a pitcher that, even if the fastball is what it is, and maybe there's an underlying injury, I still think that, we've had a lot of success with him, and, he's got fantastic command. He's just 26 years old. The secondaries were really the stars anyway. Even before this fastball decline, the slider and curveball were what drove his profile, and both of those pitches still remain very effective. Even though he's lost fastball velocity, his slider has only lost a little bit of velocity from what it was last year. It has lost more depth, which is a little concerning, but it remains fairly effective. His curveball remains in the low 80s with nice 12 to 6 action. Another very good pitch still remains, probably his best offering right now. So those two breaking balls, I think, can get him pretty far. How well he'll continue to be able to kind of thread the needle with this fastball as in its current shape and condition is unclear, and he's definitely not the pitcher he was, and he's going to continue to fall in my rankings. But I do still think he's a borderline top 100 dynasty arm because of what he's done in the past. And, it's, again, not like he's been a disaster this year. He's a pitchability arm, too. So I think he can still weather this storm. But, yeah, it is concerning, of course.
Yeah, it was between those two for me for that pick, Verdugo and Bieber. And I just chickened out and went for what I expected instead of ceiling. Like, Bieber has a way higher, much, much higher ceiling than Verdugo. But looking at what they've been doing so far this season, I can't explain what's going on with Bieber. And I think I have some semblance of Verdugo getting back to what we know him to be. So I went with the certainty over the unexpected. And as a Guardians fan, I hope it bites me in the ass and we just get, prime Shane Bieber again, because that would be awesome.
Yeah. Who are you gonna take?
I don't know. I'm gonna take Khalil Watson, and it's gonna be because he's 19 and is figuring it out. Like he was really not great last month. He hit 184, struck out 40% of the time. So the contact is going to be an issue, but that's something that we kind of thought when he was drafted. I am not too concerned about it long term because I think that that's just kind of growing pains. That's what you go through when you're getting your first taste against a little bit, or I should say competition outside of the complex. So I'm not real worried about Watson. I think that he has the ability to be a power speed guy up the middle. And so I'm holding steady with him, but I've reserved the right to change my mind if he just, can't make contact ever.
Yeah. I think that they're very much too early to give up on a player like Watson. That's as talented as Watson with his bat speed. We've seen players like that struggle in their first taste of pro ball, and then, he rebounds. I mean, this is legitimately the first time he's seen quality pitching in low A. Mm-hmm. It's not like he was in throughout his high school career, he wasn't, that was a big open question, is how he would be able to handle quality arms. And, they've adjusted to him. I think the book's out right now, Breakers, 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 Breakers. And, we'll have to see how he adjusts. He is a player that is, falling in the rankings. And I think that he's probably going to fall out of the top 50, even with all the movement up. I am concerned. I think that, and it's not like he's like a massive power bat either. I mean, I think there is legit pop in that bat, but it's, I'm a bit concerned, in general. But my pick, and this, we'll just do a couple more picks and get you all out of here. But, my pick is going to be Trevor Rogers, back to the pitching side of things. Look, I came into the season very much in on Trevor Rogers. The big issues with Trevor Rogers this year are two things. One, he's changed his slider shape. And his new slider is basically this big sweeping pitch instead of the like short slider they had last year. It has slightly less velocity, but it all of a sudden has, I guess almost 9 inches more horizontal sweep. It's not a good pitch. His slider before wasn't necessarily a very good pitch either, but it was serviceable. I'm not a fan of this slider. I don't think he has very good command of it, which is understandable considering he introduced it this season. But in general, his command has taken a big step backwards this year. And you can see it pretty clearly, if you even just go to FanGraphs, go check out his Statcast pitch arsenal and compare this year to last year. And last year, everything was pretty spotted, right? He threw his changeup on the outside corner almost consistently, outside to righties. And he spotted his fastball pretty consistently, well, in the middle of the plate. This year, it's all over the place. Everything's all over the place. And his changeup command in particular is being erratic. And that's a problem for a pitcher who really needs those two pitches to be effective. Because, again, the slider's not a good pitch. He needs those that fastball and changeup to work off each other and to get them through lineups. They are fantastic pitches when they're on. But right now, he just can't command either pitch very well. In particular, like I said, the changeup. If you go to FanGraphs, FanGraphs have splits that you can look at pitch type splits. And if you take it for what it's worth, but last year his walk rate on changeups was 2.9%. This year it's 10.4%. He's just not, and you can just see. I mean, I don't have the data on how often he throws changeups for strikes or not, but I'm sure it's way down. He's just not throwing the pitch for strikes. It's a great pitch. I just want to put that out there. Both his four-seamer and changeup remain fantastic pitches. The quality of those pitches is still intact. He just needs to get command and, in check. And once that's in check, I think he'll be fine, even with this disastrous slider, because he had a poor slider last year anyway. So it's all about command here for Trevor Rogers. And if it comes around, I'm not concerned.
I want to say pass.
it's a rough group for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
Well, how about this? Instead, why don't you pick a player you're most concerned about?
Yeah,
that you're
completely
out on.
I was thinking about flipping this around anyway. So I'm starting to get worried about Javier Baez.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's, I mean, he obviously just signed the contract, so he's not in danger of losing playing time, and he's still pretty good defensively. He's still very good defensively. But he is still not making contact, which has never, he's never been known for, so that's, maybe not alarming in and of itself. But he's making weaker contact, which is bad, and he has yet to attempt a stolen base. So you could live with a lot of the Javier Baez of it all, in his perennial leading the league in swinging strike rate, if he was going to steal you 15 plus bases, and he has not attempted a single stolen base this season. So if he's not running, I don't really know what you're getting from Baez that is worth holding out hope for. So I'm starting to get a little worried. I don't think it's going to be this bad for the rest of the season. But if it takes a dip at all, then he's significantly less valuable in Dynasty.
Yeah. It's very scary. It was a profile that, you know, for time has been trending badly, with mm-hmm. in terms of increased whiff rate, deteriorating approach. An approach that already was poor is getting even worse, and it's worse than it's ever been. And there's, you know, like you said, the quality of contact has taken a severe dip this year. And without that to drive his profile, I mean, what is he? He's a defensive first player without a bat, which is a problem for fantasy. Well, let me talk about a player who I'm now fully out on. It hurts. Trent Grisham.
just pulled up his page.
He was a player who I had like a feeling about this year that I thought would be a potential 2020 guy again. That, you know, he just had to do a couple things differently, and, you know, none of that's happened. He's not running, so we have that issue, just like we have with Baez. He has not attempted a single stolen base, Trent Grisham, which is crazy. It's crazy that that's happened. He's playing poor outfield defense. He has poor range in the outfield this year. I don't know why he's even in the major leagues right now. He mm-hmm. needs to be sent to AAA to figure this out, because it's just broken. He's broken right now. He can't hit a major league fastball. Last year, he really struggled with fastballs, but it seemed to be an outlier, right? He hit 217 against fastballs last year, only slugged 360. After two straight years in 2019 and 2020 of really having a lot of success against fastballs. But this year, he's hitting 173 and slugging 267. Again, you know, he's broken. He's just, all he can do right now is, you know, not swing. And that's basically all he's doing. And I'm out. No power, no speed, no hitting ability, no defense. Like, why is he even in the major leagues?
we talked about him earlier this year, and one of our like pleas to him was, you got to swing more, because he swings so infrequently. Only three guys swing less often than Trent Grisham that are qualified hitters, and he's just not, like, I don't really know what you're doing because the patience is not working and not useful if it doesn't come with some semblance of hitting, and it just hasn't yet.
I think what Trent Grisham is doing this year is a perfect example of fake plate discipline, or like mm-hmm. what people might consider to be plate discipline, but it's really only a product of just not swinging at pitches, mm-hmm. because he just doesn't know what pitches to swing at. Pitches in the zone, he's not swinging at. He's not swinging at pitches right down the middle. And when he is swinging, he's, you know, making less contact, and in general, all across it, right? I just think he really does. I'm still just shocked that he hasn't gone to AAA. It's been a long time coming. You know, if you're a Trent Grisham, if you own Trent Grisham in Dynasty, it's hard to drop him, because there is still that underlying upside. Mm-hmm. But he's still
25.
And he's still really young. I mean, the only explanation for why he hasn't been dropped is because the Padres don't really have another option that can play center field in mm-hmm. their minor league system on their 40-man roster. That's the only reason why he's in the major leagues right now. He should not be in the major leagues. They need to figure something out, because this is not doing him any favors. It's not doing the Padres any favors, and it's certainly not doing, well, us fantasy owners of Trent Grisham any favors.
Yeah. So I another name that I wanted to talk about is Vidal Brujan, and it's More so just because I don't really know where the consistent playing time is going to come from. And I think that's the only thing that he has left to show is he has hit in AAA. He hasn't hit in the big leagues, but has not ever gotten like a regular run of you're going to play this position or you're going to play this handful of positions, but you're going to play every day. And the depth of the Rays, big league club, their churning of talent at AAA. Like, I just don't necessarily know how he's going to get the leash that is needed in order to see if he can hit big league pitching, because he hasn't so far, but I don't think that means he can't. And I'm starting to worry if he's going to have to get traded or something along those lines before we really find out what he's capable of.
Yeah, he's getting semi-regular run right now at the major league level. The big thing I have, and I wrote about this in the article with Bruhan, is I just don't think the power's there. You know, the power he showed early last year, you know, since then, he's only hit 5 home runs over his last 142 games between AAA and major leagues. I just don't think that he has a boatload of raw power. I don't think it's going to play in games all that much. I think, and then, you know, the big issue with him this year is he isn't having any success on the bases. He's 7-for-14 stealing bases this year between AAA and the major leagues. And if the speed's not there and there's no power and he doesn't quite hit enough to drive a high average, I mean, it's just not a very sexy profile from a fantasy perspective. I mean, if you're chasing speed on a player who isn't showing it, is an issue. He's dropping. I would not be opposed for him to completely drop out of the top 100. I have to really sit down and think hard about where I think he should fall. I'm very concerned. It's Brett was, before the season, Bruhan was a player Brett did not want ranked high. He didn't want him in the top 50. He wanted me to push him down. He didn't believe in the bat. Brett's right on this one. And
shocking. Yeah.
Well, no, Brett's not right all the time. Please. Please. But yeah, he definitely was right on this one. And I am close to fully out on Bruhan. It's hard to be fully out on a player who has shown the ability to steal bases at the level he has over the last few years. You know, if he gets a regular run and is able to steal bases, that's going to have a place on any fantasy team. I mean, hell, Jorge Mateo is a player that people like this year, even though he can't hit at all because he has 12 stolen bases. But Bruhan can hit more than Mateo can. Even if I'm down on him, he's going to be better than Jorge Mateo. So, you know, it's just, well, will he run? And will he run and find success? I wouldn't go like get worried about his sprint speed yet. It's not great, but it's been such a small sample that it can fluctuate wildly. And the way that sprint speed is calculated, it incorporates all competitive runs. So I would not like be concerned about it yet in general. I mean, because I imagine he'll end up being like 90th percentile or more.
Any other names you want to touch on before we get out of here?
Yeah, well, let's, instead of focusing on the Debbie Downer guys, let me end on a high note. I talked about with you before the podcast that I'm very intrigued about. I wrote about him earlier this season. Hunter Brown is a pitching prospect for the Astros in AAA. He's thriving in the PCL, which is very much a hitter-friendly league. In my article, I noted his volatile stuff, the stuff that it's just not as consistent as you'd like to see, but he is finding a bit more consistency as the year's gone on. He's throwing a lot more strikes. As you can probably tell from his walk rate, it's not like through the roof like it's been in the past. He has huge, crazy stuff. I think once he gets to the major leagues and shows his stuff at the big league level and everyone sees it, everyone's going to be like, whoa! last night, he started AAA through 7 shutout innings, 0 walks, 10 Ks. he had a slider. He threw a couple sliders like this. He threw a slider that was 95.4 miles an hour. I mean, technically it's probably a cutter, but it definitely was like a cutter slider. I mean, he throws a really hard slider. He also threw one at 94.9 miles an hour, for example. And these weren't fastballs. It's not a Statcast glitch. This is legitimately his pitch. He throws a 90 plus mile an hour slider. Often it has a lot of depth at that velocity. And he's done a pretty good job about throwing it for strikes. It's not necessarily the biggest bat missing pitch in the world, but it definitely handcuffs hitters and is a big problem for opposing hitters. And the emergence of this pitch, because for a long time he was mostly focused on his fastball and curveball, the emergence of a slider as his primary secondary, in my mind, I think is going to take his you know, profile to the next level. He still basically doesn't have a changeup. He occasionally throws it, very rarely. It's thrown about 4% of the time. It's not necessarily a terrible pitch. So there's something to his changeup. I think that it could conceivably be a viable pitch against lefties eventually. But again, he just barely ever throws it. It really is a fastball, slider, curveball. And the fastball is 96 plus miles an hour with pretty good movement generally. And the curveball is you know, a power curveball around 80, low 80s with traditional 12 to 6 break, but a lot of depth. I really think both those breaking balls are potentially above average. And I think the slider is potentially plus. I mean, it's a crazy pitch. And he's going to be up soon, I imagine. I mean, he's in AAA. The Astros have some pitching depth at the upper levels, but I think that, you know, I would imagine I'd be shocked if Hunter Brown doesn't arrive at some point this year. So get in before it's too late.
Do you think he's going to start?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I think this is a starter's repertoire, starter's build. He's getting to the point where has starter command. I think his command of his curveball is probably his weakest link. And that's, I think, one reason why he's taken a step forward of late is because he's leaning more heavily on his slider as a secondary. You know, last night he threw a slider 30 times, which is by far the most he's thrown all year. And I imagine that that's going to become more of a trend for him, where he goes more heavily to the slider than the curveball, because he's thrown his curveball for strikes 56% of the time this year, which is poor. You know, that's below average.
Yeah.
Normally pitchers don't throw curveballs for strikes as often as they would like a fastball or slider, but still, it's still poor. So in general, I think like his command of his other pitches, like his fastball command, is probably, I don't think it's below average. I think it's probably borderline. And same thing with his slider. I think both of them are, I think maybe his slider could be even approaching average. He has actually decent command of his slider. So I like him. I think he could be a starter. He's going to at least be fun. And if that changeup does become a viable fourth offering he can throw against lefties, then he's very much a starter.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I have him on a bunch of watch lists. Just a little bit unnerved by some of the walk rates, but if it seems as though he's rounding into form, everything else is pretty like great, at least as far as the stats are concerned for Brown. So maybe it's time to plant your flag before he continues his ascent and everyone else, and the secret is out, so to speak, on Brown.
Yeah, he almost certainly have a walk rate in the double digits, I imagine, at the major league level. So he'll be an interesting one to see how it ends up working out. I mean, he's not like a Matt. I'm going to go back to Matt Brash again. He's not Matt Brash type of command. There is actual command here. It's just still a work in progress. And I mean, the pure stuff that he has is. Not many pitchers in the minor leagues can match it, for what it's worth.
Nice. All right, Hunter Brown. He's under radar, or if he wasn't before, he should be now. I think that'll probably wrap us up for this week. I will be out the next couple, but I think we're still going to be having content for you, and we'll still be Tino-ing in the near future and beyond. So it's going to be all good. We will catch you next week. Thanks for listening this week. Good luck with all your dynasty teams, and I hope you all continue to make progress to championships. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.